Hello there, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us for Market Sense today. I'm Heather Hedges with Fidelity. So it appears the April jobs report was just what the doctor ordered. That data that was released on Friday shows employment is slowing down and the labor market isn't rolling over. And investors feel that this could be a step in the right direction, just enough weakness to potentially give the Fed a little bit of leeway to potentially make some cuts. Remember, the Fed is tasked with a dual mandate. So I think that's important to remind folks of off the top of the show here. You know, their dual mandate is number one, keeping inflation under control, but also number two, making sure the maximum number of people are employed here in the U.S. So it's going to be interesting how they do that fine tango, so to speak, and whether they'll be keeping rates higher for longer to try to tame stubborn inflation, or if it does cut like it said it might do at the onset of the year to try to avoid hurting the economy and employment too. So to talk about what this all might mean for investors, today we're excited to be joined by Denise Chisholm. She's Fidelity's Director of Quantitative Market Strategy, and her research focuses on analyzing market history. She's looking for patterns and probabilities that can help inform the current market outlook. We're also excited today to be joined by Naveen Malwal. He's an institutional portfolio manager here at Fidelity, and he sits on an investment team that manages accounts for over 3 million individuals and families here in the U.S. Pretty impressive stuff. Thank you to both of you for making the time today.
Hey, it's good to be here.
Yeah, great to be back, Heather.
Always great to see both of you. I like the combination of you guys, two really bright minds. I'm so excited to dig into some of these topics today. But I just first want to remind anybody watching or listening today, please leave your questions for Denise and Urien. We want to know what's on your mind. We do read all of the comments underneath the video player where you're watching, because we use those comments to form future episodes. So with that, today is Tuesday, May 7th, and I want to start with the latest market news because we've got a lot to talk about today. So stocks soared on Friday, Denise, after that weaker than expected jobs report. You know, for folks who are kind of just getting into investing, that might sound kind of counterintuitive that we had this weaker than expected jobs report, right? And stocks actually took off. But you have to remember that, you know, some economic weakness can actually be a positive in this situation because it could help to slow inflation. And that might give the Fed the green light that it needs to cut interest rates. So that's one question, you know, what's the Fed going to do next? But then another question for you, perhaps the bigger question, Denise, here is this slower growth the start of a trend that investors should keep in mind? And does this all mean that, you know, multiple rate cuts are still on the table this year? Or are we now just talking about maybe one rate cut, or even conversely, with inflation proving to be so stubborn, is there a chance we might have to endure another rate hike, Denise? What do you think? What do you make of all of this?
Yeah, I think investors are focused a lot on inflation overall, but I think that they have to realize that starting points matter. You would be having a different discussion over what the Federal Reserve may or may not do if they had raised rates to only 3% or only 4%, but they've raised rates over 5%. So that starting point matters historically, and does, historically speaking, tip the odds more in the rate cut camp. But that said, I think that when we zoom out on this focus of, are payrolls really strong enough to sort of generate more inflation and then have the Fed be higher for longer, or are they very soft and potentially giving us concern for growth? When you hyper-focus on a month-to-month trend, you run the risk of looking at noise rather than signal. Sometimes just a year-on-year rate, just data smoothing and zooming out and looking at historic probabilities gives you some context. With that, payrolls have been growing around 2% for the better part of 6 months. And that trend, interestingly enough, is if you looked over history since 1962 and you said, what did inflation average over the next 12 months after that year-on-year non-farm payroll growth of about 2%? It was also around 2%. So it's not clear to me that we're outside of where the Federal Reserve would be concerned about. But again, as it relates to most specifically, tying that all back to the stock market, remember, higher rates aren't always bad and lower rates aren't always good, especially so higher rates if they are a reflection of a resilient economy. The stock market historically has not really had a problem with it. So the risk reward remains positive. And I think many investors might be really surprised to know that the sweet spot for inflation, when you look at market returns, the highest odds of a market advanced and the highest average returns are in that tranche of between 3 and 4%, despite the 2% target. So I think that those things are important to keep in mind when you're focused on the Fed and interest rates and inflation, as it might be more noise than signal in the market and where the market might end up.
Okay, so what investors really want to keep in mind is not just why rates are low or high, but why they are, and take a look at that from that lens. And yeah, that's surprising that the sweet spot for equities, you know, has historically, for returns for equities, has historically been between 3 and 4%, because just as a reminder to our audience, the Fed's target is to try to get inflation to 2%. So you would think that might be, right, what the sweet spot would be, but it's a little bit higher than that. All right, Naveen. Oh, thanks for your patience. I want to bring you in now. You know, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about how hotter than anticipated inflation has caused the bond market to, you know, has caused, first of all, the Fed to rethink the number of rate cuts, but also the expectations have created some volatility in the bond market this year. What does the Fed's latest positioning mean for bond investors and for bonds as an asset class?
Yeah, so investors have adjusted their expectations. I think the outlook for bonds is actually more constructive for the rest of the year. But so far, it's been a bumpy ride for bond investors. What we had coming into the year, if you look at the Fed futures market, that market suggested the Fed may cut as many as 6 or 7 times in 2024. And between December of last year and up through last week, now that same Fed futures market is suggesting maybe one rate cut this year. So a significant change in how many cuts investors are expecting. And that led many interest rates to rise here in the US and even some globally. And that led to some bumpy negative returns in bonds so far this year. However, let's turn it around now. Looking ahead, if it turns out the futures market is correct and the Fed is not likely to raise rates further from this point, well, that might lead to more stability in the bond market. May not see as much volatility around interest rates or in bond prices. Not only that, but now these higher yields that are out there, they may give a nice boost to bond investors. Those yields can now be a benefit for those investors going forward. So that backdrop to me feels more constructive than what I think investors have experienced over the last couple of months. Now, having said all of that, I think it's important to remember a couple of things. One, the Federal Reserve does not control every interest rate in the US, nor globally. So I would expect interest rates to move up and down like they always do over time, so that even if over the long run, bond investors may expect a positive return, we're likely to see periods of volatility and noise here and there as well. But in my opinion, it doesn't mean that an investor has to suddenly make a drastic change to how they're managing their bonds or stocks or other parts of their portfolio.
You know, Denise, when I was just listening to what Naveen was saying, what was most striking to me about was about how much has changed recently. Like Naveen said, at first we were talking about maybe 6 rate cuts. Now we're talking about maybe 1 rate cut. And we just met with you in March, and it's just remarkable to me that so much has changed since we last saw you on this show, Denise. Back then in March, we didn't know yet that inflation was proving to be, you know, much stickier than we even realized back then. Another development since you and I spoke in March, and we had you on the show here at Market Sense, is you know, that recent market sell-off that happened in April. So, you know, I'm curious. I'd just like to kind of reconnect with you on this and ask you what your message would be to investors at this point now. You know, maybe investors who say those two data points taken together, inflation being a little bit more sticky, we had that market sell-off. What do you say to investors who might say that they're staying away from the stock market for now?
So I think it's always risky selling on headlines. I mean, we know as equity market investors that the market is more likely to bottom on negative headlines. And if you get out on negative headlines, what's your buy signal in terms of getting back in worse news? So it creates this sort of strange loop, because the stock market is effectively a discount mechanism and discounts bad news in advance. And really, you just highlighted one of the things that's fairly observable, which is we went from situations 2 years in a row where we were thinking that the Fed was going to cut more than expected, and many investors thought that that would be a good thing, to really no cuts. And it ends up last year that the equity market was up 20% as well. So I think sometimes you end up with these contraindicators that I think history can really help you figure out what is the likelihood of those being critical drivers. So if you zoom out and think about about sticky inflation, you know, the Federal Reserve has made a lot of progress, or at least inflation has come down a lot from 9% to, let's call it 3-ish%. So we can go back historically and say, okay, where is that? That's around median levels. What happens when you're around these median levels when you accelerate or decelerate? Is that the critical driver to the market? Do you have these bifurcated odds when it accelerates and that's bad for the market, or when it decelerates and that's good for the market? And you find that the answer to that is no, not really. It's 50-50 either way, meaning that inflation usually isn't the driver when it's not at these anomalous levels of above 4.5%, which is at a top quartile reading. So without that, again, it gets back to that you have the potential now as an investor to be focused on something that is more noise than signal. So then the question becomes, what is the signal? And it's back to that durability of growth. And really, this is reflective in what we're seeing in terms of earnings growth. So fast forward, you know, rewind to, you know, 6 months to a year ago, we were in an earnings recession. I'm going to call it a recession because earnings growth was contracting. And now we've actually surprised to the upside enough, really over the last, I think the last quarter was a surprise level of about 8%, which is the highest we've seen in at least 2 years. And now we're at the expected rate of growth of probably 5 to 7 to potentially 10% over the next quarter or two in terms of earnings growth. To the extent that that earnings growth is durable, and usually when you have an inflection like we have seen, it increases the odds of it's durable out to year two and year three. That is the signal that is much more important than the noise potentially in the sticky or not sticky inflation.
So you think earnings is the driver for equities and not inflation, and that's really what investors should be paying attention to.
Exactly right.
Got it. Okay, Naveen, want to bring you back in. How about you? You said you you know, your investment team manages accounts for several million investors. How is your team looking at this right now, and how is your team viewing these recent events?
I'd agree with Denise at the outset. What she said was that headlines and market pullbacks, they don't always need us to take action. It's very tempting to do so, try to react to what's happening, but we have not made any big changes to how we're managing client accounts. How we look at these situations when there is either a market sell-off or developments around the Fed or something happening around the world is we look to research, hey, is this going to have an impact to two things? One, does this change the economic backdrop here in the U.S.? Or other parts of the world in a meaningful way? And I'd say the news over the last few weeks hasn't drastically changed the fact that the U.S. economy is still experiencing economic growth. We saw the GDP number last week showing the U.S. economy is still growing positively so far. So we don't believe that story has changed. And the second thing we look at is the same thing as Denise. What's the outlook for earnings? Has that been affected by what is kind of played out the last few weeks? And here again, I don't believe the effect of the Federal Reserve keeping rates higher for longer necessarily means that earnings growth is going to be severely impaired going forward. So since the answer to both of those questions on the economy and the earnings, nothing has changed, we haven't felt the need to change how we're managing accounts for our clients at this time.
Okay, Naveen, thank you for that. Let's stay on the topic of earnings for a moment and talk about where investors might want to consider going from here. Denise, you know, there's been a very strong battle between very strong tech earnings and inflation fears, anyway, lifting or dragging down the markets. Do you think that trend will continue?
Yeah, I'll echo Naveen's thoughts really briefly, just in the sense that corrections are really normal and healthy in the market. It's just that when they happen, everybody thinks that, you know, it's not normal this time. And what you see is you can never, there's no 100% guarantees, but in 60% of the years since 1962, so that's most of the years, that the market actually ends up higher, you have a peak to trough contraction of somewhere between 5 and 15%, right? So this is well within the normal bounds of what the market does historically. So I think that that's data point number one. Data point number two is to get back to that sort of rock, paper, scissors, historical probabilities of what matters more, inflation or growth. It usually comes through, and you can see it historically speaking very clearly, either in GDP growth or in terms of earnings growth, that growth matters more than where inflation is. So when you talk about that battle, in some ways you might be running the risk of focusing on the day-to-day battle, but missing the broader trend historically. historically. Now, what we saw in technology stocks was a very strong inflection higher, meaning that they more than delivered on the earnings growth that was expected. Remember, technology stocks were the first into the earnings growth recession, and they have been the first out of the earnings growth recession. They have seen an inflection in that earnings growth that is only typical coming out of prior recessions, even though we didn't have an official recession. So we saw it coming out of the pandemic, and before that, we saw it coming out of the financial crisis. If you look at those historic probabilities and say, what happens the year or two following after inflections that are that steep, what you find is this is a durable expansion more often than not. So I think that as much as we're talking about earnings growth being good for 2024 and that being the focus for investors, I think that investors need to shift their focus to the durability of earnings and that we are likely in the early stages of what is likely to be a multiple year recovery in earnings growth.
Okay. I like the rock, paper, scissors analogy. That's a good way to think about it. So strong tech earnings, boosting stocks has been one story. Where else do you see some strong opportunities right now that investors might want to consider?
Yeah. So with that as the backdrop, I mean, there is still a positive risk reward for technology. That said, I do expect the market to broaden out from a relative performance perspective. Technology and communication services, and to a lesser extent, consumer discretionary or parts of it in that Mag 7 have been dominant. And as much as they have been dominant on a relative basis, we have seen absolute breadth, meaning more stocks going up, actually confirming what you would call a broad market uptrend. So that's a positive sign, but we haven't really seen broadening out from a relative perspective. I do think other areas of the market are very interesting to me. Two, I'll talk about financials and then in small and mid caps as well. And they're very similar in the sense of if you heard me talk about the market, one of the reasons why I think that the risk reward is skewed favorable is because on a lot of the indicators that I look at, the market is still discounting a lot of bad news. There are parts of the market where I do see excessive fear. I judge it by valuation spreads, which is just the difference between cheap and expensive stocks, either in the financial sector or in small caps, which is to say that, hey, high interest rates have already had an impact. The problem with waiting for interest rates to come down to have a catalyst for those stocks to potentially outperform is, again, you run the risk of ignoring the fact that stocks often discount bad news in advance. I see that in financials with those wide valuation spreads and on absolute valuation. It's pretty rare in our database historically that you actually get a sector on a median basis to be below 10 times earnings, PE. So the valuation price average of all the stocks in the financial sector relative to their earnings, that usually provides a favorable risk reward backdrop. And the same thing is true in small and mid caps. While interest rates have been increasingly a risk to those, what you're seeing is now that's more than reflected in multiples relative to the large caps, meaning that the stocks are as cheap as they have been in at least 20 years. And the cheaper they have been historically, the higher their odds of outperformance have been as well, which doesn't create a guarantee. But to me, it does create this positive risk reward where I see increasing probabilities. I want to lean into them from an overweight perspective. So I think interest rate sensitives are interesting to me, along with small and mid caps in conjunction with technology that's been market leadership.
Got it. All right. Well, and thank you, too. Fascinating to hear about how you are making some of these judgment calls that you're making. And it's just helpful to know that. So it's financials and small and mid caps that you're liking right now. But what about what you're not liking so much in the equity space? Anything that we should perhaps shy away from or that in your eyes, there are sectors that we might want to avoid at this point?
Yeah. So again, this is just Denise Chisholm's opinion, right? So we have lots of opinions at Fidelity. All our diversified portfolio managers have opinions. But I will say, you know, when people talk about international stocks offering a value proposition, sort of like I just talked about with small and mid-cap stocks, I look at it quantitatively as more of a potential for a value trap. The reason is it's true when you look at the broader indices, whether it be Europe, whether it be IFA, or just, you know, ex the U.S. overall, the international stocks have really never been cheaper. based on PE. But the problem with, if you look at that sort of bottom quartile when they have been cheap historically, they only have 27% odds of outperformance. And in fact, you see this odd skew of international being more likely to outperform the U.S. when they're more expensive. And when you dig into history, you actually find the reason for it. It's cycle to cycle. Even ex-technology stocks, which are dominant in the U.S. and not really dominant in international. But if I just look at the median stock of materials company or industrials company or consumer discretionary companies, international versus the U.S., what you will find is a secular downtrend in terms of those average companies. They get worse and worse on a relative basis every single cycle. So earnings growth has been just dominant in the U.S. And that trend, I think, as an investor, your base case should be, is this might be the reason why they are cheap, but cheap for a reason, and why cheap stocks aren't necessarily predictive of forward outperformance. So with that, is, you know, I think unless you have a strong base case of why this secular trend that's been in place for the better part of 20 years is likely to change, I view international stocks as much more risky than the U.S.
Okay. So the Italian doesn't love international or necessarily even European stocks.
That's true.
Oh, gosh. I hope your family's not upset. How about Naveen? How does your team view internationals?
So from our point of view, we manage these assets for our clients for a very long time frame. These are typically people's retirement accounts or other long-term savings with 5 years plus time horizon. With that mindset, we look at managing accounts in a diversified risk management way. And for us, a part of that is going to be exposure to international stocks. What we have found is over the long run, combining a little bit of international to a mostly U.S. portfolio can help provide a smoother return over the long run without much of an impact on returns at the same time. So as an example, if a client of ours is in a managed account that is diversified across different asset classes, and their target is roughly 60% stocks and 40% bonds and other investments, well, of that entire portfolio, usually a little bit less than 20% is aimed at international stocks directly. So that just gives you some perspective as how we think about using international as part of a broader mix of investments. And actually, our current positioning isn't too far from what Denise is suggesting. So we right now are favoring U.S. stocks ahead of international developed. While we think there is potential in both areas for certain companies to thrive, it does seem that there is perhaps more momentum when it comes to earnings here in the U.S. And yes, the valuations in Europe are attractive, but there are some challenges there at the same time, whether it's the economy or the Ukraine conflict or just different business mix. As Denise is pointing out, there seems to be more of the AI technology build out here in the US as opposed to Europe. So that's one way of thinking about it. Yet at the same time, emerging markets is a space where we are starting to lean more into, and more so than areas like Europe. There, depending on what you're looking at, emerging market companies typically are based in Asia or Latin America, and some of those regions are dealing with some challenges, but other regions have tremendous growth outlooks when it comes to their economies, their populations, the average income. So with that all put together, it seems to us emerging markets might be a space that over the long run may help provide some excess returns for investors. Now, at the same time, they tend to be risky. So typically, emerging market stocks are roughly 3, 4, 5% of a client account if the client has a 60% stock allocation. So again, managing risk is important. And for us, the international piece is more about diversification and risk management than necessarily trying to outperform U.S. stocks over time.
That makes total sense. All right. We are past the 20-minute mark. We don't have a ton of time left. I just wanted to end with asking both of you today what to watch, which is how we always like to end the show. So, Denise, I'll start with you. What are you watching?
I'll be brief. I'm always watching credit spreads. So the difference between high yield bonds and the 10-year treasury as a proxy for what the credit market is concerned about, how many companies might go bankrupt.
Okay, Naveen.
And for me, two quick things. One is consumer sentiment. It has improved versus last year. We're going to get another update from the University of Michigan later this week. Hopefully that continues. And the second thing is producer price index. That's another way of thinking about inflation. So another clue on the inflation story coming up in the next few days.
Okay. And no doubt earnings also always, right, at this time of year?
Always.
All right. We've got to leave it at that. Thank you both of you for the timely discussion. And to our audience, just a reminder, if you missed any part of the discussion, you can catch our replay on social media or our website, or you can also take us on the go because we're a podcast, so you can always catch up with us that way. On behalf of Denise Chisholm and Naveen Walwal, I'm Heather Hedges. Thank you so much for the pleasure of your time today. And remember, we are on Tuesdays at 2 Eastern. We'll see you next week.
Fidelity does not provide legal or tax advice. The information herein is general and educational in nature and should not be considered legal or tax advice. Tax laws and regulations are complex and subject to change, which can materially impact investment results. Fidelity cannot guarantee the information herein is accurate, complete, or timely. Fidelity makes no warranty with regard to such information or results obtained by its use and disclaims any liability arising out of your use of or any tax position taken in reliance on such information. Consult an attorney or tax professional regarding your specific situation. Information presented herein is for discussion and illustrative purposes only and is not a recommendation or an offer or solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Views expressed are as of the date indicated based on the information available at that time and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of the Fidelity speaker and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. This podcast is intended for U.S. persons only and is not a solicitation for any Fidelity product or service. This podcast is provided for your personal non-commercial use and is the copyrighted work of FMR LLC. You may not reproduce this podcast in whole or in part in any form without the permission of FMR LLC. To the extent any investment information in this material is deemed to be a recommendation, it is not meant to be impartial investment advice or advice in a fiduciary capacity and is not intended to be used as a primary basis for you or your client's investment decisions. Fidelity and its representatives may have a conflict of interest in the products or services mentioned in this material because they have a financial interest in them and receive compensation directly or indirectly in connection with the management, distribution, or servicing of these products or services, including Fidelity funds, certain third-party funds and products, and certain investment services. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Diversification and or asset allocation do not ensure profit or protect against loss. The MSCI EAFE Index is designed to represent the performance of large and mid-cap securities across 21 developed markets, including countries in Europe, Australasia, and the Far East, excluding the U.S. and Canada. The securities of smaller, less well-known companies can be more volatile than those of larger companies. High-yield, non-investment-grade bonds involve greater price volatility and risk of default than investment-grade bonds. Stock markets are volatile and can fluctuate significantly in response to company, industry, political, regulatory, market, or economic developments. Investing in stocks involves risks, including loss of principal. Foreign markets can be more volatile than U.S. markets due to the increased risks of adverse issuer, political, market, or economic developments, all of which are magnified in emerging markets. These risks are particularly significant for investments that focus on a single country or region. Fixed income investments entail interest rate risk. As interest rates rise, bond prices usually fall. The risk of issuer or counterparty default, issuer credit risk, and inflation risk. Foreign securities are subject to interest rate, currency exchange rate, economic and political risks, all of which are magnified in emerging markets. It is not possible to invest directly in an index. Fidelity Wealth Services provides non-discretionary financial planning and discretionary investment management through one or more portfolio advisory services accounts for a fee. Advisory services offered by Fidelity Personal and Workplace Advisors LLC, FPWA, a registered investment advisor. Discretionary portfolio management services provided by Strategic Advisors LLC, Strategic Advisors, a registered investment advisor. Brokerage services provided by Fidelity Brokerage Services LLC, FSB, and custodial and related services provided by National Financial Services LLC, NFS. Each a member NYSE and SIPC. FPWA, FBS, and NFS are Fidelity Investments companies. This information is intended to be educational and is not tailored to the investment needs of any specific investor. Personal and workplace investment products are provided by Fidelity Brokerage Services LLC, member NYSE, SIPC, 900 Salem Street, Smithfield, Rhode Island, 02917.